Welcome to the IPF edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the pulmonary fibrosis community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent with Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with Meilan Han, Chief of the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. At U of M, Dr. Han is leading groundbreaking research in oxygen delivery as it pertains to chronic lung diseases. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much, Larry, for having me.
Let's start by telling us a bit about yourself, your medical background, and how you came to specialize in chronic lung disease.
I think, like many aspiring physicians, I was drawn to critical care because there's so much interesting physiology that goes on in the ICU, and it can be very exciting. But ultimately, after I started practice, I was really drawn to caring for patients with chronic lung diseases and have really enjoyed my outpatient practice and developing relationships with patients. So that's kind of sort of how I ended up where I'm at right now. But I kind of along the way also developed a passion for research, and so have been quite involved with several clinical trials for chronic lung diseases, both an area called chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is quite common, as well as idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, which, as you know, is much more rare.
Can you talk about IPF and how rare it is compared to other lung diseases?
As a pulmonologist, chronic lung diseases such as COPD, for instance, are probably one of the most common, not only chronic health conditions, but one of the, at least before COVID, was one of the most common causes of death, actually, in the world. But compared to that, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis in particular, as opposed to, let's say, COPD, which affects maybe, estimates suggest, 15 to 30 million individuals in the U.S., idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis probably affects about 100,000 individuals in the United States. So relative to that much more chronic condition, it's definitely more rare.
And in the case of IPF, we simply don't know what's causing it, as opposed to other kinds of pulmonary fibrosis, correct?
Right. So fibrosis really just means scarring. And when we say idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, that really inherent to the title means we don't understand what caused it. We can see the same patterns of scarring associated sometimes with certain noxious exposures. We can also see it in probably one of the most common things is sometimes associated with certain connective tissue diseases like rheumatoid arthritis or scleroderma. These other conditions cause scarring in the places like the skin and the joints, but also the lungs. But patients with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis really don't have another obvious etiology to have the inflammation in the lung.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're an expert in oxygen management. Can you talk about that? What does that mean?
I'm an expert in caring for patients with chronic lung disease. But one of the, you know, when we care for patients, particularly when they get to be quite severe, there are challenges that develop for management. And for us as pulmonologists, one of those things is oxygen delivery. So as the lungs start to fail, we have to remember that the lungs do two things for us. They get oxygen in and carbon dioxide out. And for the majority of patients, the biggest failure and the thing that we have to address first is oxygen delivery as the lungs start to fail. So one of the ways that we can do that most simply would be to either have the patient breathe through a nasal cannula or a mask as we supply the oxygen either through a tank or a concentrator. But if you think about that from a practical standpoint, that's fine if the patient's going to sit at home and not move or is in a hospital bed. But when we're trying to support patients to remain active, things like exercise and pulmonary rehabilitation are incredibly important for maintaining activity levels and quality of life for patients with chronic lung diseases like idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. And trying to figure out how to deliver oxygen to them in a way, in particular in a portable way, that allows them to maintain function is really, really challenging. One of the problems that we have with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis in particular, as compared to, say, certain other lung diseases, is that the amount of oxygen patients with IPF sometimes need is actually really high. And while we have some ways of delivering portable oxygen for patients. Usually those kinds of devices don't deliver the really high levels of oxygen that sometimes patients with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis need. So I think one of the things that's important for listeners to understand is that this remains a huge challenge when we're trying to understand how to manage patients with IPF.
And from what I understand, there hasn't really been any development in this particular field in years. Whatever technology was used 20 years ago has continued to be used today.
No, you're right. It has not really been a huge area for innovation. Most patients either have a large stationary concentrator at home, which is fine as long as they don't want to go too far. They can go as far as their nasal cannula will reach. We do have some portable concentrators that have come out, but unfortunately, the amount of oxygen that even those kinds of things that can deliver remains low. One thing that we can do is, in addition to just providing the oxygen, some patients may actually need what we call ventilation. And by that, what I mean is that not as just the oxygen isn't just entrained to kind of pass the nose, but rather we actually push air in. And that does two things. It allows us to get oxygen levels up higher. It also, for some patients with chronic lung diseases who also have problems with carbon dioxide retention, that helps those patients as well. So for some patients, combining oxygen delivery with ventilation can help. But these devices tend to be also not particularly portable. So at the University of Michigan, for instance, we've been working with a small startup company called Ares Medical to try to innovate in this space. It's kind of an interesting story. The founder of the company actually was an undergraduate at the University of Michigan several years ago. He was interested in this area. He chatted with a lot of my patients to understand what the needs were. And then he's graduated and gone off and started a company. And we've been working with that company to try to develop a much more portable unit that will provide oxygen and ventilation for patients, hopefully in a much more kind of life-preserving way that helps patients have a lot more freedom with what they can do.
And this portable device can be used at home, correct?
Correct. And ideally can be taken out. It's still in the development phases, and we're still working on getting a clinical trial off the ground to try to understand how we can best meet the needs of the patients. But I think the important thing I think to think about here is just that the need is so great. And so I'm excited about the partnership, you know, with Ares. But if we have any other listeners out there that are engineers or have an engineering bent, there's still so much needed in this space.
I understand you're also using innovative diagnostic imaging technologies to treat people with IPF. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we actually are doing, you know, quite a few different things here at the University of Michigan. But one of the projects that I personally have been involved with is something called parametric response mapping, which allows us to register inspiratory and expiratory chest CT images of patients and allows us to identify different types of abnormality. While we actually originally validated the technique in COPD, which is another chronic lung disease, we've also been investigating its utility for diseases like idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. There are also some other methods that we're looking at to try to better quantify the kind of scarring that we see in pulmonary fibrosis. I think one of the most exciting things for me working at a medical center like the University of Michigan is that not only do we get to work with world-class investigators and create new technologies or therapies. But then, you know, hopefully, as in the case of the imaging technology I just spoke about, we then actually get to use it in everyday practice in trying to help diagnose and treat patients. So that's, for me, one of the most exciting things about working at a place like the University of Michigan.
Wonderful. I wanted to ask you just a couple of more things. And one is, how has the coronavirus pandemic affected clinical trials in your field and patients with IPF in general?
Yeah, that's a really great question. It's been really, really hard. For a while, our clinical trials were completely shut down. And then if you think about it, a lot of the trials that we do require us to get pulmonary function testing, and a lot of that was shut down because of concerns regarding aerosol generation when the patients do the breathing maneuvers. So fortunately, most of our research projects are back up and running despite what I will call a wicked fourth surge here in Michigan right now. This is the worst surge we've had to date, but we've kind of learned what we need to do to keep our clinical our research staff safe, as well as our patients safe. I think the impact on patients with chronic lung diseases like IPF has been unfortunately fairly profound. Many of those patients depended on regularly attending things like pulmonary rehabilitation, both to keep themselves active, but also as sort of a social outlet and to, you know, get that support. And unfortunately, with the pandemic, a lot of those programs got shut down, at least temporarily, some permanently. And patients have just been really scared to leave the home. They know that they're the most vulnerable. And certainly before the vaccines became available and we understood how, you know, how important things like masks were, many of these patients were not leaving their house at all. And so the problems with social isolation and anxiety and depression is sort of a secondary pandemic that I would say we're dealing with for many of these patients on top of the primary one. So it's getting better, but this is still, I have patients with IPF I still have not physically seen since the pandemic started.
And I understand that Michigan is ground zero for this fourth wave right now.
Yes, it's really, really bad. I was chatting with a friend of mine the other day, and she just, you know, I think that this nation to a certain extent is tired of hearing about COVID, and Michigan being in its fourth surge, many people are sort of just ignoring the news and tuning it out. But we are in dire straits here. It is worse now than it was with surge one, in part because we didn't, with the first surge, we reallocated medical professionals all to doing COVID care, and we shut a lot of our normal care down. And this was devastating for the health system for many reasons. It wasn't good for patients. And so we've tried to keep everything open this time, but it's just such a huge strain on the system. And to be honest, one of my big concerns is that, you know, even for patients like with IPFs, for instance, that don't have COVID, their regular care may be imperative. For instance, they end up in the hospital with pneumonia or something like that, because the health system is simply so strained. We can barely take care of our non-COVID patients on top of the COVID surge.
I understand. Before closing, I wanted to ask you about your new book, Breathing Lessons, A Doctor's Guide to Lung Health. What's that all about?
Oh, thank you for asking. So I'm actually a spokesperson for the American Lung Association, and at the beginning of the pandemic had an opportunity to do an interview much like this one with another podcast, Freakonomics. And we talked about oxygen delivery and the ventilator and how people breathe. And my editor wasn't my editor at the time, but he is now a gentleman named Matt Wayland in New York, heard the podcast, reached out. And a year later, we have the book. I realized during the pandemic, I was really bombarded with questions from everyone on how do the lungs work? What happens when lungs fail? How does COVID impact the lungs? And realized there was a huge need for a simple book that explained to the public how their lungs work, how doctors think about chronic lung conditions, how we diagnose them, what are the latest treatments, you know, and also what patients can do to preserve their own lung health. And so I am really excited about it. And I think I'm hoping it'll provide a really good resource for patients, because I really do think that knowledge is power. And one of the things I realized during the pandemic is that the lungs are a black box for the majority of the public. I think most people have a rudimentary understanding, for instance, of how the lungs work, but nobody seems to understand how the lungs work. And I think if patients can understand how their lungs work, then they can be active participants in their own healthcare and better advocates for themselves. So I am really excited about it, and I'm really hopeful it will help a lot of patients.
Great. I really appreciate your talking to us today. Thank you so much for being here. This is Larry Luxner with Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.